Welcome to Integration Excellence, the podcast around enterprise integration and interface management. We explore topics related to integration in the SAP world and beyond. My name is Adam Kivon. I'm an SAP integration expert, book author, trainer, and founder of White Paper Interface Design. Enjoy. Yeah, welcome to another episode of Integration Excellence. And today we speak about integration strategy. And for sure, this is not the first time I speak about strategy. It's not going to be the last time. I also connect a blog post, which is also called Integration Strategy 2025, because this is kind of also a changing topic. And there are also, aspects that are added to this topic over and over again. So what is integration strategy and why do we have to have one and why do we have to consider this topic? And as usual, if we are not going to, focus on it, if we are not going to cover it in a way in our organization, in our, plans, in our budget, maybe even, it's not going to happen. Yeah. And we can also do things like, we just use a middleware component and do integration in this way or the other. But in most of the cases, it is really, really beneficial to have a structured approach and also answer questions like the why, the what, and the how. Yeah. So what are we doing? Why are we doing this? And how are we going to achieve the goal? Yeah. And so I have covered this topic in seven aspects, and integration strategy as a as a starting point, it's not only about, choosing the right technology and choosing, what component do I have to use. It is part of it, of course. Yeah. So having a good integration platform is always beneficial, and having a clear approach to where to go and how to achieve that also based on the skill set is very important. But it's not only this. And it's also not a pure selection when to use what, when technology component is used in which scenario. That's also not only integration strategy. So again, I have covered this divided this into seven aspects, from integration principles, over technology stack, demand management, platform governance, and then governance by tech component, operations by tech component, and organization. Yeah. So those are the seven aspects, and I'll go through them one by one, explaining a little bit what I mean with this. And hopefully this gives you some insights how to build your integration strategy or how to, dive deeper into it, how to get in touch maybe with other members of the team and think about how integration can happen in a successful way. So number one, integration principles. This is how you want to decide how do we want to do integration in the first place. Yeah. How should integration be like? And many of you will hear things like, everything needs to be API driven. Everything needs to be API first, API only, wherever, API everywhere. Okay. Yeah. That's a good approach. API led connectivity is a very good approach. This has been, I think the idea comes mainly from MuleSoft. Where you also have this three-tier aspect of having different layers of APIs, system APIs, very, very, system-centric, process APIs, more business process-oriented, using system APIs, and then experience APIs more towards the use case, to the scenario, maybe even towards the front end, whatever, and also again being a layer on top of the other two, but to be realistic, and in the last couple of years I was dealing with integration, I've seen that it's a very good approach, and it's very important to think in APIs, think in terms of integrations, not in file transfers and in more in APIs. But the world cannot always be solved in an API approach. It can be a paradigm, it can be a goal, but it is not realistic that it's going to happen every time. Yeah. And then after APIs was kind of, a agreed among all the, you know, integration architects that API is good, API is needed, and whatever API we are using, it is good. Yeah. So be it REST, GraphQL, OData, SOAP, whatever you name it. Yeah. So the technology might also have some pros and cons, but in general, to be able to connect with many, many applications in the landscape, be it a standard application or a, you know, homegrown application, it is important to cover many, many aspects and many formats and protocols of API usage in general. Yeah? So that's one thing. The next thing that came up, and this is a more recent development, is event-driven integration. Yeah? And event-driven is, I would say, not the solution for everything. So even if when you think about companies like Solace, but also Confluent and others, they believe that, you know, many things can be achieved in a pure event-driven way, but it is usually a combination of both. Yeah, it's a combination of API-oriented integrations, event-driven integrations. Yeah, event-driven here in this context means, yeah, primarily messages go through a broker. Messages are asynchronously processed. Typically, yeah, they are buffered. They are queued. They are following typically a publish and subscribe approach, but not always. Yeah, so there are many flavors of event-driven. There are many capabilities in event-driven. They also serve scenarios like request-reply patterns. So it's not only a, you know, publish and subscribe approach. It can be also a very specific integration. And again, yeah, both aspects, both architectures are great. Yeah, and it's not it doesn't mean choose one or the other. Sometimes it's also a combination. Yeah, what is to say against it? Basically nothing. The point is, it is not always realistic to go for the one or the other because requirements might be different. And if you have to connect with a partner that allows you to connect only via AS2 protocol because it's EDIFAC, or they only are able to exchange data through an SFTP server, what will you do? Would you say, no, I don't want to make business with this customer. They cannot, you know, feed our Kafka topic. They cannot feed our Solace queue. They cannot call an API on our side. Sorry, we will not do business with them. No, you will do. And you will go for an SFTP adapter and connect with this customer through other ways. Yeah. Other aspects are microservice architectures. Yeah, you can, if you think in microservices and if you think in especially homegrown applications where you are not just, you know, connecting and integrating existing standard applications, big applications like Salesforce, Workday, SAP S/4HANA or other big players. Many times you have to do your own stuff. You have to build your own applications. And the good practice is definitely to go for microservice architectures. And then there is also, you know, very often the possibility to have direct connections, direct API calls, point-to-point connections a lot. And that comes sometimes with microservices. So that can be also avoided and you know, at least enhanced, extended by the use of API gateways, yeah, where you have APIs in the microservices, consuming, provisioning through webhooks, through provider-consumer model. And then you easily go through gateways, yeah, where you can also, you know, standardize the view on the API and also show how they are linked, how the interconnections are between the microservice components. Yeah. Another aspect is canonical data models, yeah, which is also, we thought this is going to be disappearing soon. I think 10 years ago, I think when all the SOA initiatives were gone, and also the hope that everything can be standardized, all the IT landscape can speak one language, using a common data, yeah, a canonical data model, a common language across everywhere. We have seen that this is not so super realistic in many, many cases. And, you know, vendors bring their own standards and formats. Yeah, Salesforce speaks its own language, SAP as well. And many others have their standard APIs. And of course, if we build our own stuff, if we are again building our microservices, it can make sense to follow a canonical data model approach. But in many cases, microservices serve a very specific purpose. Yeah. And, the common ground, yeah, the common reusable aspects are very, very small by experience, yeah, at least what I can say. Yeah, you can standardize an address, you can standardize maybe even a customer profile. Those are kind of, you know, simple reusable things, but that's even not so simple when you think globally, yeah, when you think about an address in Europe, in the US, and in Asia, especially Japan, it might look totally different. Yeah, sometimes you don't even have a zip code. Sometimes you don't even have a street. Yeah, you think only in buildings and sometimes even coordinates. So it's not always that super simple to work for canonical data models. I don't want to say, you know, this is bad or good, but it has to fit to your architecture. And again, anyway, you can only influence your own, you know, area, which you can build. And then many times I found this as a kind of an overhead in the usage, and it slows down the speed of the delivery of the projects. And then again, I mean, the principles, there are many, and the integration strategy is many times not only about, you know, we have to be either event-driven or API-led, or, you know, yeah, in best words, it is, you know, following a canonical data model. It is not always that easy, yeah? And also other aspects like data mesh or domain-driven design can influence your strategy, and you can have clear boundaries. But there are other aspects that are, let's say, more generic and more global, which I always recommend when speaking about integration strategy. And they can be also very much enforced in later steps. Yeah. When you think about, you know, did you build something according to the integration strategy? Yeah. Because, you know, having a strategy without enforcing it is also not very, very good. So, As a good result of this exercise for integration principles, things like loose coupling is a very good approach. Yeah. So if you think about applications, systems, components, even for B2B or B2C communication, thinking in a loosely coupled way is a very good approach. And there is also, you know, another article about loose coupling in this blog post. So feel free to dive deeper into this topic. But loose coupling comes with very, very many, you know, with a lot of dimensions. Yeah. Not only that, you know, you should ideally go for asynchronous communication than for synchronous communication, if possible. Yeah. Unless you need a direct feedback, unless you need a direct validation, of course, you have to go for synchronous, but it can be also a combination of both. Yeah, and you don't have to have a synchronous communication across both applications. It can be, you know, towards one integration component, it can be asynchronous. And from the other, towards the other application, it can be synchronous because the application only speaks in a synchronous way. Yeah, so do use as much asynchronous communication as possible. That's a good rule of thumb. Then, for sure, I mean, this is the no-brainer of all, but definitely avoiding point-to-point integrations is key. Yeah. And point-to-point doesn't mean here that we have a dedicated integration across a middleware that goes from one system to another serving a specific interface. That's not what I mean with point-to-point. With point-to-point, I mean two applications talk directly to each other. Yeah. One API is invoked from another application directly without any integration layer, without any middleware component in between. Yeah, that is, that might be nice if you are building something as a mock or as a POC or as a MVP or whatsoever, but that is not the approach you have to go. If you have more than 10 interfaces in the end, because then you will lose a lot of transparency if you allow your developers to build things point to point. You know, they can do it and they will do it. And you know, the tech challenge is not that high and implementing this directly, but you should always enforce going through a middleware component. This is a simple rule, but it is a rule that is not always easy to enforce. So just, putting a gateway in between, an API gateway, any API management system has a gateway, can be already the solution for that. And that will not, damage your IT budget, thinking of traffic and controls. But it's a very, very important aspect of doing that. Then push over pull. Yeah. Try to do, push oriented integrations than pull. What does it mean? If you go for a pull approach, that means, everyone is only providing APIs. And you always have to, call the APIs to ask, do you have new data? Is there anything new since then? And whatsoever. This is a pull-based approach. Yeah. And you have a lot of queries and a lot of traffic without any result or without any data coming back. A push-oriented scenario. And this can be also, a core element of event-driven. Yeah. Whenever a state is changing inside the application, the application triggers the push, triggers the execution of the data through a client API, through a webhook, through a connection to a broker, pushing the data in whatever means towards the middleware component. This is what I mean with push. Yeah? And that's clearly an advantage. And the consequence of it is that this is going to be real time. Yeah. So whenever an event is changing, when something is happening in the system, the event is executed. And that means execution can happen real time and will not happen in batch. Yeah. So batch oriented integration like 30 years ago is simply outdated. Yeah. And you cannot control always things through time. Integration should happen when the need is there and when the requirement comes up to exchange data. Then, of course, wherever possible, avoid file-based integration. Yeah, can be a rule. It can be also a very hard rule. And then everyone has to explain, why is this a file-based integration? Why couldn't this be solved in a different way? And then we always did it like that is not the solution. Yeah, so this should be a clear rule. How to avoid that. And there is also another article about why file-based integration and also the thinking in files is not up to date anymore for in 2025. Yeah. Last topic. Also, request for standardization and reuse. So wherever possible, reuse an API, reuse an interface, reuse whatever you have built. Standardize where you can, but try to be not as dogmatic as possible. Yeah, so this is a very loose rule, but it can be enforced and it can be also, be embedded into quality gates, which we will also speak about a bit later. Yeah, so integration principles. Yeah, so what you should keep in mind for this approach or for this chapter point, whatever, is that the world is not only API-led and event-driven. Yeah, it's more than that. Sometimes it's a complex orchestration required, and the world is not as simple. And sometimes even files are required. But what should never be required is point-to-point integration. Yeah, the milliseconds you might be solving or might be gaining not going through a gateway are not that many. Yeah. So we speak about 200, 400 milliseconds going through a gateway. That's usually not the reason why you should not put an API gateway. All right, second topic, and this is not going. This is now going to be a bit less detailed. Second topic is the technology stack. Of course, you have to define your integration platform as part of your integration strategy. So this is one core element that you have to go for. Unless you are a super huge organization that has all of it, yeah, you have the freedom usually to say, look, for this and that component, we have this solution and only this solution. We are not going to have another solution for the same thing. And this is not, because this is not, not very efficient. Even if the, you know, projects ask for it, even if, you know, other vendors are trying to, you know, force you, the solution is usually not, you know, it's not good to have a strong overlap, yeah, of all the components. So, yeah, core element of an integration strategy is also putting together a good tech stack, a platform, and then, you know, drawing, you know, a one pager showing, okay, this is my platform. This is what we do. This is the, you know, components we have chosen for the following areas we are covering in our integration strategy. And there are typically six areas which are important to cover. Yeah. And I mean, it's not always necessary to have one for each, but the bigger you are, the more you will see that, you know, there is a good reason for having each of the components in place. So one is, let me start with the first one. It's the orchestration layer. Yeah. So, formerly known as an ESB. Yeah. As part of your IPaaS, this is typically, a middleware, a component that is able to integrate with many systems, with many protocols, many formats, can do transformation, can do orchestration, can call APIs in many, many variants and interact with a lot of systems. Yeah, but it doesn't mean that the orchestration layer is always involved. It's only involved if, you know, there are requirements for, yeah, protocol switch, differences, transformations for sure, yeah, mapping steps that are executed, and maybe a sequence of API calls that has to be performed. Yeah, typical orchestration layer solutions are SAP Integration Suite, of course, especially cloud integration, Microsoft Azure Logic Apps, low-code environments for orchestration, but also MuleSoft, yeah, has a strong orchestration component. It's not only an API gateway; yeah, it also has a very, very good and very powerful orchestration layer, as well as Boomi. Yeah, so those are the typical orchestration layer ESBs, which you have to pick, ideally one or two. Yeah, many times only one is not, it's sometimes it's simply too late. You have too many of each. So, but if you have three, try to go down for two if possible. Don't try to have a zoo of everything everywhere. It's not going to be, you know, good for the long run. Then a message broker. Yeah, that supports publish and subscribe, ideally, that supports queuing. And it can be RabbitMQ, it can be Solace, it can be even, for other cases, maybe for streaming cases, also Kafka. Yeah, so, but a broker that is able to handle also high loads of data and supports publish and subscribe is a very, very important aspect of the landscape. And it doesn't mean, again, that every traffic goes through a broker. It only means that, you know, you have to have this capability in your portfolio, in your integration platform to allow the traffic. Yeah. And then API management, which is typically, the gateway itself, so the gateway through which API calls are performed, through API proxies, but then also the consumption model, organized in a portal, grouped in products and applications or subscriptions. This is also very important to have, ideally, a central API management platform in the landscape. Again, if you have more than one, it's you know, it somehow defeats the purpose. But I also recently learned that there is a solution from Microsoft Azure. It's the API Center, where you can you know, put together all the different API management portals you might have, and bring all the APIs into one central place again, yeah, to have a good overview regarding the consumption of the APIs, and then again have you know, one place for all developers where they can, you know, discover and consume APIs. So that was the first three, from my point of view, the most important ones. But then don't forget, there are other aspects that are very important. One is specifically for data integration. Yeah, choosing a data integration platform for high data volumes, big data that needs to be replicated, not only in the old ETL way, but also when you think about data fabrics. There are a lot of requirements coming up in the data integration space. Yeah, it's not anymore synchronizing database tables. It's more also about, you know, streaming of data and moving data, you know, also towards data lakes. This is there is also, you know, there are many solutions out there from SAP, from Informatica, from you know, different players in the market. Ideally, you have one, yeah, but more realistic is probably that you also would end up in having two, at least in your landscape for data integration. Last two are RPA and MFT. RPA, yeah, robotic process automation. What is this? So this is a, let's say, specific no-code environment, yeah, for also... you something you are giving not only to integration experts, but also to so-called citizen integrators. Yeah. So people in the IT that are maybe not having, you know, dedicated integration skills, but can deal with, you know, the modeling of workflows of, you know, automated or human interacted, executions. Yeah. And typical, yeah, typical solutions here are, for example, Microsoft Power Automate or SAP Build Process Automation. At least those are the two I know that are very big in this sense. And yeah, pick a solution for RPA if you don't, if you didn't choose anyone. Try to avoid running everything. At least try to avoid having more than two. And yeah, this is also something that needs to be addressed or it's to be put into your integration strategy into your platform. And last but not least, MFT, managed file transfer. Yeah, this is again something we don't really want and we don't really, you know, like, because file-based integration is outdated and it's not the best, but you know, it's reality. And better you have something that is good, that is stable, that is you know, secure, and you have a platform that is part of the stack and simply, you know, covers things that are required and then cannot go away anytime soon. And you definitely need to address. You cannot, you know, run this somehow through a broker or through a through an API gateway or try to solve this with RPA. It's not going to work. Yeah. Sometimes data integration capabilities can cover it, but, you know, there is a clear niche also for managed file transfer solutions, and you should also pick one of them. And then, yeah, every component comes with typically, you know, at least if you choose one component in 2025, it's we speak typically about public cloud. If you need something to run in your private cloud or in your on-prem environment, you also have to consider maybe, you know, having one for this and one for that. But many cases, at least in the SAP, also in the Microsoft Azure world, there are options to run things also locally in the private environment. Also, MuleSoft has this. So, yeah, this is not a game changer here to choose one or the other. But consider it if you have specific requirements to run things also on-prem. Then next aspect is demand management. Yeah. So, now you have your core integration principles. You know how things should be. Yeah. The do's and don'ts. You have a defined tech stack. And now you also need to have a clear guidance when to use what. Yeah. You should, you can have a simple decision tree. You can have a simple matrix. Yeah. It can be a one pager. It can be an Excel sheet. It can be also the use of the SAP integration assessment, which is a more detailed approach of, you know, listing all the capabilities and then having a kind of questionnaire based approach when to, when which component is selected and recommended. In my personal experience, I haven't seen this running very successfully at all yet. Yeah. So we have been, you know, playing a lot with it. We also did some projects and customer systems, but the reality was that it is a bit oversized for many, and the many we spoke to were quite big organizations. Yeah. So it is a very good approach to go through it, but ISAM as the core principle of SAP, which is behind this, is many times already good enough to help the integration architects and the entire integration team to think in the right patterns and in the right approach when to use what and when to select what. And when it comes to a high overlap of components, yeah, for example, you have Logic Apps and you have Integration Suite, and maybe even you also have MuleSoft, they have a very, very strong overlap of what they are capable for. And, you know, ideally, you don't, decide for a pure, domain-based approach, like, any SAP system has to go through Integration Suite. Why? I mean, there is no hard reason why you should do that. Especially also the same for MuleSoft. Yeah? Any interaction with Salesforce should go through MuleSoft. Why? There is no strong reason for that, except the vendors want you to follow that path. Yeah, but technically there are no hard reasons to go for that. Yeah, MuleSoft and Logic Apps have excellent adapters to connect with the SAP world. The SAP and Logic Apps is the same against Salesforce. So there is no reason really to divide the world into vendors and the vendor technologies. And if you think about other, companies like Boomi, they have no application, at least not that I know, no applications they are, married with. So they are generic as well. And they also have the adapters and connect. Can technically connect everywhere. So a better approach, if you have a strong feature overlap, yeah, ideally you have no feature overlap and you have only one ESB or one orchestration layer. But if you have a strong overlap, you should more go for, is it a network zone that helps me to identify where to build the traffic? Or is it maybe the cost of operations? Yeah, is it maybe cheaper to build an interface on a cloud integration than on MuleSoft? Yeah. Or are there any other aspects? And what is very helpful in that area is also defining integration patterns, yeah, which are going more into the details of, for example, how to integrate with, Kafka, how to integrate with Solace, how to, interact with this or that approach if you have the requirement to put them into the map and show how this is done. But again, the decision criteria should be very, very simple. And this is not rocket science to make a decision when to use what. Then number four, platform governance is the core principle of platform governance is to ensure that you have a high quality of your integrations and your integration principles are enforced. Yeah, you make sure that all the things that you mention in number one, integration principles are, brought into reality, and you challenge the developer, you challenge the people who have built something against your principles. Yeah. And if they are not following the guidelines, yeah, in terms of why is this a file-based integration going through, whatever component that is anyway outdated, you have to explain. Yeah. And you have to have the right to say, no, this cannot be transported into prod. We will not, you know, go for that. And also asking for, like, you know, where is the documentation? Do we have a documentation? Are the requirements according to the, you know, requirements documentation? Yeah. Is it fulfilled? Is the technical documentation complete? Those are also quality gates you should, you know, embed later on. But on a platform governance level, this should be, you know, check marks where you can say, okay, this is done, this is done, this is done. I have them all, you know, according to a four eyes principle, confirmed and agreed. And it doesn't have to be super bureaucratic. It doesn't have to be a monthly meeting where, you know, everyone is waiting for a kind of, you know, board, architectural board. It can be very direct. It can be very fast and simple. It's a bit more than a Slack message or a Teams message, but it can be very, very quick. Then another aspect of governance, and now we go a level deeper, we have to have a specific governance, which is by tech component. Yeah. So every integration layer component, yeah, of the integration platform has its own, you know, ways of doing things. And therefore you need to have the governance by tech component. Yeah. So this is a part of an integration strategy that goes into every area, into every integration layer component. And this is something you have to enforce on a high level to say, look, your integration platform always has to answer the questions like, you know, how is change and transport management done? Yeah. How are you documenting changes and how are we transporting it? Is it, you know, a manual export import approach, or is it a really a structured, you know, thing you can follow up later on, which can be even planned and deployed according to a project delivery, whatever. Then test management, how are integrations tested? Yeah, developer tests, unit tests, integration tests, even automated testing. Test management has to be answered and has to be executed and ideally followed up. And then, of course, again, as mentioned before, quality gates, yeah, to ensure, you know, are the naming conventions correct? Are all the security requirements we have complete? Yeah, those are the things that you also, you know, check off and validate during your build process and also during the deployment. The next chapter, number six, is done by tech component. It's how you do operations. How do you run operations? Yeah, and especially in production, you have to always think about what happens if this is then in prod and this is not the only integration that runs in prod. How do you monitor? How do you find errors? How do you identify issues? How do you track for a specific message? Yeah, do you have an identifier that helps you to find a specific message later on, whether something was transmitted or not? Do you need archiving? Yeah, do you need to have a proof maybe a month later that something has been executed and this is the data that has been sent to the supplier or whatsoever? Do you need to have a specific, you know, logging and monitoring that goes across the integration layer components and that goes across the end-to-end, you know, application integration? You might also need to, you know, choose a component that is helping you to log this in a separate way. And also, you know, part of operations is also, you know, any housekeeping activity. But also things like, you know, do we have performance issues? Do we have maybe even too much traffic according to the plan or according to, you know, what is common sense when we think about it? So that's number six. And seven is, last but not least, the question about how do you organize your team? Yeah, how big is your team? Yeah, integration teams are many times not, you know, it's in most of the companies I have seen, even in big organizations, integration teams are a handful of people only, most of the cases. They are, you know, they get support through externals, yes, but in many cases, you know, it's hard to find the skills and it's hard to find also to operate this in such an environment. So, but independent on the size, independent on whether, you know, you are dealing with a lot of internals or externals, You have to choose a model. You have to choose, a way that you say, is this a central approach or is it a decentral approach? Yeah. Do I have an integration team that is building everything for everyone? Or do I have, it separated and I only, establish the governance and the guidelines, the rules and, the projects and the product domains or the applications, they bring their, team members, and they build the integrations, from their point of view. And we only have to make sure that the quality is good enough, what is delivered by, again, internals or externals. Also the question, how much is run by externals? How much do you outsource? How much do you run internally? Especially also when it comes to operations, are you having an ALM that is helping you? Not an ALM, an AMS, managed service provider that is doing your operations, or are you able to do it in-house? And also the question, which was mentioned before with RPA, can you give specific integration tasks also to people that are not experts in integration? Can this be a citizen integrator, for example, who is able to configure standard integration content on SAP Cloud Integration in a plug-and-play approach without very detailed skills, just following the rules and guidelines of the configuration steps? So many times this can be also helping, integration teams, central teams to speed up a bit their capabilities when it comes to delivery. Yeah, that was my take on integration strategy. And as a last topic, this is also part of the blog. I was also, putting together what is the, integration strategy from the different vendors' point of view. And I picked the three ones, at least I know. Starting with SAP, but also Microsoft and MuleSoft are mentioned here, which is quite interesting. So if you look at SAP's integration strategy, and this is also, linked, they have, if you break it down into very simple words, those are the, key takeaways. First, use Integration Suite, of course, SAP. Use the product they have invented to make this work from their point of view in the best way. Okay. Use ESAM as a methodology, and then also establish an integration center of excellence. Make sure that this is that also you are able to enforce the governance and quality assurance of all your integrations. You have the rail guards and guidelines how to build integrations in the first place. And ideally also based on integration assessment. Then use LeanIX for enterprise architecture, also covering integration aspects. Also important, it's interface fact sheets are part of LeanIX. So ideally you are also using SAP LeanIX for your integration strategy. And then you apply the following clean core principles to all your SAP based integrations. So SAP having this clean core approach, especially towards S/4HANA public cloud, but not only. And those are the four elements that are listed here. First, use standard APIs. Standard as much as possible. Okay. It's a no brainer. Avoid RFC and IDOC. Because it's outdated and old technology. You can argue about IDOC because IDOCs are also SOAP enabled, and thus you can also see them as APIs, but this is what they say. Use standard events. Again, like standard APIs, use standard events. If not, you build some new ones. And then the last one, use AIF and Cloud ALM. So Cloud ALM, of course, for monitoring, error resolution, AIF as well for monitoring, but with AIF also you can use, can even build events and also integrate in other cases. So those are the four clean core principles from SAP. And then from Microsoft point of view, of course, Microsoft covers a lot of different integration services with Azure. And there is also a very good guideline how to design integration architectures. They don't have a dogmatic approach in terms of use this and use that. Of course, you use Azure, yeah, and ideally you do the maximum with Azure, but there are also a lot of linkages when you think about Event Hub and other cases where you are directly speaking to other vendors, connecting with other brokers, yeah, and integrating, especially also with, you know, Kafka and others, SAP, Event Mesh, Solace. It's also very, very open. Yeah, it's not so, you know, proprietary in that sense. And, you know, the guidelines how to design integration architectures is also mentioned here in the blog post. And last but not least, MuleSoft, of course, use AnyPoint as the platform to, you know, build APIs and integrations. They are clearly in favor of the API-led connectivity paradigm, yeah, and this is also what they go for. And one is important aspect for integration strategies with MuleSoft is that they, you know, are in favor of defining an integration center for enablement. It is like the equivalent of an integration center of excellence, but they are more in terms of, you know, democratizing APIs. It's more about, you know, the discoverability and the usage by the developer community of APIs. Yeah. So this is a little bit different flavor than the Integration Center of Excellence. But it's also, you know, following very important aspects of, you know, having also a central team that is managing and nurturing the community and the environment and the company with information about integration topics. Yeah, so a little bit longer recording today, but I think important to cover. And again, integration strategy is not, you know, a simple task. And I wish I could say, like, you know, if you follow this 10 topics, you are good to go. It's not that easy. And it has to also match to your environment. And I even thought about asking ChatGPT, what would be, you know, important for having a good integration strategy, but then you get, like, you know, typical answers as well. Sometimes not very helpful parts. Other aspects are very, very overlapping with what I said today. So it's not completely out of the nowhere. Yeah, give it a go. Try, of course, also interacting with ChatGPT, getting good results, hopefully, for your integration strategy. All right, that's it for today. Next time I'll have a special announcement, and this is not revealed yet, but we have a little change in the entire delivery of this podcast, so there will be some news next time. So stay tuned until, I think, end of March, beginning of April. Let's see. Bye.
How mature is your organization when it comes to integration topics? Find out for free with our integration maturity assessment at wint.co/IMA. That's wint.co/IMA. In case you want to take control of your integration landscape to increase transparency and automate your integration quality processes, please schedule a call at wint.co/contact. If you enjoyed the content, please like and subscribe to our podcast. See you next time.